that the community has a right to be informed and that the community has the right to fight for what it loves.
An offence which has been on the rise and has cost Australians up to $1 billion.
Most people sort of fantasise about flying. Most people think about it. But rather than just thinking about it, we do it.
I've been stopped on the street and spat on.
How many pages do I have to do and how much have I done so far? I've only done like 1%.
Good evening and welcome to Razor's Edge. My name is Jesse Begley and you're on 2SER 107.3, Sydney's best community radio station. For the next half an hour, we will be bringing you current affairs stories from all over New South Wales. Everything from the headline stories to important grassroots information that affects you. This week, we have a brand new Seeking Sydney story for you. We answer the question, does Sydney have an underground BDSM culture? We also speak with Jess Miller, who was voted in this week as the new Deputy Mayor of Sydney. Temperatures are set to rise this weekend, with meteorologists speculating we could see the first 40-degree day September has ever had. We find out the potential health risks these sudden temperature swings could bring. We also hear about the potential privatisation of inner west and south southern bus lines and the possible implications. All that coming up on Razor's Edge, 2SER, home for New South Wales news. Let's go to our first story. It's time for our Seeking Sydney, where we answer a question submitted and then voted on by you, the public. This week, we answer the question, does Sydney have an underground BDSM culture? Razor's Edge reporter Monica Samayoa delved into the world of BDSM to bring us the answer to your question.
It's not all about hitting people, because at the end of the day, if you just go around hitting people, you're not a dominatrix, you're an asshole.
Welcome to Seeking Sydney, where we answer your curious questions about our harbour city. My name's Monica Samayoa, and this week's question took me on a whirlwind of an adventure. The person who submitted this question decided to stay anonymous, so I'll have Chris repeat the question for me.
Does Sydney have an underground BDSM culture?
I wasn't particularly sure how to tackle this question and where to even start. I knew about the term, but I didn't really know exactly what it meant. I contacted Mistress Lenore, who has been in the industry for a couple years now and works privately, to help give me a breakdown of the term.
The term BDSM itself is an umbrella term. It's an overlapping abbreviation. It's bondage, discipline, dominant submission, and sadism and masochism.
As we were chatting away, she made me realize that there is more to BDSM than just a kinky play, chained latex, and pain. A mistress or master wears many different hats, figuratively and, well, literally.
You're a sex therapist. You are obviously a mistress, you're a doctor, and you're a janitor. Yeah. So,
although BDSM may sound like it only involves pain, many people participate to revamp their sex life, explore their sexuality, and what I was able to uncover throughout this journey to relieve stress, a lot of it.
BDSM is primarily psychological. A lot of people seem to think that it's just hitting people and beating people. And, you know, things like 50 Shades of Grey definitely did not help that. They're scared to actually delve into it because they think it's all violence. And when the fact is, most of it is psychological. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just having a physical session. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There are people who get, as we were saying before, a cathartic release from their sessions. A lot of that comes from the mental aspect and being able to tap into their sexual identity and their identity as a whole and be able to get that release that they need. When you put it in a psychological lens, you need to be able to get into the mind of your submissive or your dominant and to be able to understand what makes them work.
She also said some clients just come in and want to talk.
A lot of them, they tell me their problems too. That's the thing. It's not all just sex. Like, I love listening to people and where they've come from. And so being able to hear people from different walks of life explain why they like this particular fetish, why they want to uncover it, and why they want to explore it with me.
After speaking with Mistress Lenore, I wanted to know more about BDSM and how it relates to sexual therapy. I also wanted to get a first-hand look at a dungeon and speak with more professionals in the industry. I then found myself upon the steps of one of Australia's finest BDSM establishments. The outside of Temple 22 looks like any other normal house in the city of Sydney. I was confused when I first arrived because I wasn't sure I was at the right place. I looked left, I looked right, I even looked up and down to see if I saw any sign I was at the right place. After a few moments of looking around and seeing if anyone was watching how confused I was, I walked up to the front door and saw a small camera which had a blue button right under it. After pressing it, a few moments later, the front door unlocked on its own, and I cautiously stepped in.
Ready to explore a
yes,
wonderland.
Yes, I am.
I met Mistress Rubin, who is the owner of Temple 22 and has been in the industry for almost 30 years. I met Master Dominic, who also has 20 years of experience. They gave me a tour of Temple 22 and answered a lot of the questions I had after speaking with Mistress Lenore.
Popular cross-dressing room and fun room. And so
Mistress Rubin said many professionals in the industry were disappointed with 50 Shades of Grey because it gave an indication that people involved in the industry were abusive and mentally off, or it comes from a result of trauma or abuse in their life, and that's just not the case.
It's still more male. However, in all the years I've been doing it, there has been a massive, I think with the movies and the music and, you know, media, etc., over the last 20 years, like Madonna's sex book and then the 50 Shades of Grey, actually, as much as we all hate it in the industry, it actually got so many vanilla people really interested in trying this kind of thing. So it's really exploding. It's not as underground as it used to be.
She also said that people are exploring themselves more openly now. They're more relaxed and more eager to discover themselves. And if you want to be disconnected and have the session be all about you and your own sensations, you can also experience that in a very safe environment.
Many years I've had people that seeking me out to give a session whenever they're feeling a bit uptight or stressed or depressed, and they choose a scene with me and instead of taking like medication, you know, for them they get the same effect. Like every month or something they'll come in and they're feeling a bit tight around.
Release.
And you know, and so I give them what they need, whether it be a heavy spanking and a few strokes of the cane and a, you know, and it just releases all that stress for them and they walk out of here feeling like a million bucks.
Master Dominic then explained to me about having the ultimate trust with their clients and being able to show them that they can be themselves while supporting positive growth, mental balance, and evolvement.
We get exposed to their raw, authentic selves because the actions speak so much louder than words. So people, you know, a lot of people, they have jobs where they're, you know, whether it be sales or whatever, and they're having to, like, spin their life. But here they can't hide their true selves. So it's kind of like a sanctuary for them in a way. That they come here and
they can be themselves. They,
like,
yeah.
Like a mask comes off. Mm. Yeah, and they bear the inside of them.
So many people have to wear these masks to please their family, to please their partners, to please their friends because they're frightened of risking their relationships or connections or not being accepted. So here, you're accepted,
yeah,
you know?
It's one of the most non-judgmental places in the whole country, really.
So it's addictive. You know, if you have a place that you feel like you can go to where you can really be yourself and you're not going to be judged and you're going to be accepted, and not just accepted, but people are just going to love you for your uniqueness and your openness, you know, it's going to be addictive.
After speaking about how important trust is between their clients, Mistress Rubin stressed the importance of doing research before participating in BDSM and making sure you're mentally ready.
Look, you can go to a practitioner that's not experienced, that doesn't know what they're doing, and it can cause you damage, like definitely. And I highly recommend doing your research. You know, if this is an area that you're interested in, definitely do your research. Make sure that you go somewhere that's safe, somewhere that's legally compliant, and research the people that you're interested in seeing and that, you know, make sure that they've got enough experience to play with you in a safe way. You know, this sort of play in the wrong hands can be very destructive and very, very dangerous. But it can also be so therapeutic and magical and amazing. This is not the complete option for people that suffer from depression and anxiety or bipolar or borderline or any of the other schizophrenia or whatever it is that so many people are living with today. But it's an alternative for a lot of people that suffer from sort of like light, moderate sort of depressive episodes and anxiety. It can be very empowering for them. It's not for everybody, though. It doesn't work that way for everybody. So please, I just want to clarify that. You need to make sure that you take good care of yourself and you know yourself.
The number one thing with BDSM, it's about trust and communication and making sure that you and your play partner, whoever they may be, however many you may have, that you're looked after, you know your limits, and they know theirs. And just to make sure that you take care of the people that you play with and have fun exploring together, because at the end of the day, BDSM is fun. And whether you like really hardcore stuff like mummification or you just like a little bit of a spank, have fun with it and just make sure that you're safe about it.
BDSM has certainly gained more popularity over the past 20 years and it continues to grow. It's deeper, more emotional, and more intimate than people think. And it's not all about whips and chains. There's a pair exchange, a conscious way of relating to others that can bring a couple closer together and be more aligned to who you are authentically. So to answer this question, BDSM no longer has an underground culture in Sydney. I want to thank our listeners who keep sending in great questions for our team to answer, and if you haven't yet, submit your own question to us. We would love to answer your question. Also, check out our previous Seeking Sydney stories and learn a thing or two about Sydney. We have a new voting round next week, so go to our website, www.2scr.com, and search for Seeking Sydney and get voting.
And thank you to Mistress Lenore, Mistress Ruben, and Master Dominic for being part of that story. A truly fascinating Seeking Sydney story that you, the people of Sydney, brought to life. As Monica was saying, the next voting round will begin soon, so get online at 2SER where you can vote and leave a question for the Razor's Edge team to investigate. You're listening to the Razor's Edge, 2SER 107.3.
Join our friends at Event Cinemas George Street for the next installment of In the House Cult Classics on September 22nd, The Lost Boys. Sleep all day, party all night, never grow old, never die. It's fun to be a vampire.
One thing about living in Santa Carla I never could stomach, all the damn vampires.
Hosted by Sevens, Jabba and Quinny from Supernova. Check the full program and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Here's a taste of some of the new music we've got for you on 2SER this week. Globetrotting African fusions from Pierre Quenders. Boomin' and croonin' dream pop with a 50s vintage feel from Madeline Kenny. The softer side of Sonic Youth's Lee Ronaldo with added electronica. Creep slowly. 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, and diverse new music.
You're listening to The Razor's Edge with me, Jesse Begley. Our second story for the evening. The independent councillor Jess Miller was elected by her fellow councillors to the position of Deputy Lord Mayor this week, with Labor councillor Linda Scott crossing the chamber to vote with Clover Moore's faction to defeat the Liberal candidate Christine Foster. Razor's Edge spoke with her about being elected and the future of her term. What does it feel like to be elected as one of the youngest Deputy Lord Mayors of Sydney?
Oh, well, obviously it's a huge honour and it's a bit exciting, but I think, I mean, beyond the sort of the titles and things like that, that's not really that important to me. It's more about having the opportunity and just a little bit more time to focus on getting stuck into some really good work. So everything's a sort of a little bit, you know, buzzy at the moment, but I'm like, yes, now it means we can just really get stuck into some good work.
Can you tell us any issues that you plan to push over the next year in the role?
I don't think it's about pushing one single issue. I think what I've seen over the past year and what people have told me over the past year is that they're feeling like quite pressured in a whole range of ways, and particularly young people in the city are feeling under enormous amounts of pressure and stress, like whether it's housing affordability or the way that employment is changing, or the lack of opportunities, or, you know, the lack of places to go out too late at night. There seems to be a real disconnect between what people want at a local level and, you know, how they feel as though they're being treated by things that are seemingly out of their control. So really, I think I'm going to take the next 12 months to kind of reconnect and see if we can alleviate some of those pressures and do what I can to try and connect or reconnect the community and young people back to the city.
Absolutely. As an environmentalist, do you have a vision for how Sydney you would like to see evolve as a city?
Yeah, of course. When you break it down, like, everyone's an environmentalist. Like, I wouldn't call myself an environmentalist as opposed to, you know, anything else. But I think what we all really appreciate is clean air, plenty of shade, places that are nice to sit in. You know, something that is going to be really exciting is to see how we begin dealing with our waterways. I know that there's sort of this movement towards waterway restoration and reparations, and the idea that, you know, something like the Parramatta River might be swimmable again is something that's quite exciting. So, yeah, I think it's about appreciating that people living in the city are part of an ecosystem, and when, you know, when there aren't trees and when the air is clogged up and fumy and gross and there's litter everywhere and, the, you know, there's, like, sewage discharge in the beach, that nobody likes that. So it's about, yeah, it's sort of looking at those things as part of the broader ecology of the city.
Do you think you can keep a cohesive relationship between the independent councillors and the party councillors?
I don't see why not. I think on a lot of things we really agree. And if you look back over, if you look back over what council have done, there are a lot of things that unanimous support from everybody on council. You know, we're particularly looking forward to working with the more progressive members of council, like on things like housing affordability and, you know, some of the sustainability issues and issues surrounding equity. So where we can find common ground, I think it's really important to work together. And where we disagree, then we disagree also.
And how do you feel working under Clover Moore as a mayor? Do you think you guys will have a good working relationship moving into the future?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think being part of, I mean, what makes this role really special is that it's about working as part of a team. And Clover has set such an amazing example over so many years and has been really brave in not only having an incredibly ambitious city vision for the city, but then also the courage to follow through with that. So I became involved with the city because there was a real alignment with values, and everybody on our team, I think, certainly share those values. And we, you know, we have differences of opinion, obviously, but we work together to do the best we can to represent the people of the city and make good things happen in the city. So I expect that it'll be a great working relationship with everybody on the team. And, you know, I think I'm in a great position to just learn a lot.
Thank you so much, Deputy Lord Mayor Miller, for joining me this afternoon. Are there any final words you'd like to say to your new constituents?
I think it's a really great, like, it's a really good chance, I think, to get involved. There's this sort of belief sometimes that what you do doesn't matter and that it's all too big and all too overwhelming. But I think it's worth reminding ourselves that if you really want to get involved and if you want to play a role in influencing how the city should be, then you can. And it's like, just call our office or send an email or write something on Facebook or Twitter us or something. I'm really, really interested to know how particularly younger people who feel like they increasingly feel like that they're being alienated from the city would like to play a role in imagining and making it what it can be in the future. So, yeah, take the opportunity to, you know, you've got, like, yeah, take the opportunity to use us. That's what we're here for.
And thank you to Deputy Lord Mayor Jess Miller for speaking to us. A heatwave is expected to turn spring on its head this Saturday, as the BOM indicates record-breaking temperatures throughout New South Wales. Myself and Ellie Madridge invested the potential threats that these unprecedented temperatures could pose to the well-being of the New South Wales population.
The forecast for this weekend's weather is predicting that temperatures will reach heights that New South Wales has never seen at this time of year. The CBD is expected to hit 36 degrees Celsius. Penrith and Richmond may surpass 30 degrees for the next 4 days. In western New South Wales, it might even hit the 40 degree mark. And it's barely been 2 weeks since winter ended. Now, if these extreme weather conditions are a symptom of climate change, it is apparent that a new dawn is upon us. And while we should keep being proactive and work as hard as we can to minimise our footprint on the environment, reactionary measures must also be taken to ensure that we can stay as safe and healthy as possible in the face of extreme weather patterns and geographical events. Jessie Begley spoke to Dr. Lydia Maynor, director of the Flinders Research Program for Disaster Nursing, about how exactly changes in the weather affect our physical health.
So what kinds of health problems can we expect to rise under extreme weather conditions that may be brought on by climate change?
What the evidence has shown, and I have shown this myself, that people will be more prone to cardiovascular problems, heart problems, renal failure, and breathing conditions, and also heat exhaustion, particularly dehydration and heat stroke. They're just some of the few and the more popular ones that tend to be exhibited by people, and also what everyone has noted when they look at emergency department presentations.
And who is at risk at most for these health issues?
Yes, there's quite a range here. Young people, young children, certainly. And then we go to older people, 75, 85 and over, and people that are already on, that have problems with heart condition or renal conditions or respiratory conditions. If you have already one of these morbidities, you are more at risk.
And aside from the short-term effects when exposed to weather, extreme weather, are there any long-term health consequences?
So far, I haven't seen anything in the literature, and I have looked at some of this myself, but not published yet. And what people are seeing now, rather than long-term problems, they've seen that there is season variability. Before, certain diseases or certain conditions were only seen in either summer or winter or spring. Now it doesn't matter. You're seeing certain conditions all throughout the year.
What can we do to stay healthy and safe in extreme weather conditions?
Yeah, number of things. Particularly if it is very hot, maintain normal body fluids. Do not overdrink or underdrink. Do not dehydrate. That's very dangerous. And the other issue that's very important for people that are on medication, such as for heart conditions or renal conditions, they need to be very careful not to dehydrate. Otherwise, whatever they're taking could be far more concentrated in their body, or and not to overdrink or take more fluid than normal. Otherwise, once more, you will have a dilution effect.
Absolutely.
So that to maintain normal and adequate fluids.
Thank you to Dr. Linda Maynor from Flinders University for speaking with us. And remember, if you're in New South Wales over the weekend, slip, slop and slap. The controversial plan for the government to privatise bus routes in Sydney's inner west has been met with protests by bus drivers and petitions. Raise's Edge spoke with Divisional Secretary Chris Preston from the Rail, Tram and Bus Union.
What are the complaints the New South Wales Public Transportation received that has prompted Transport Minister Andrew Constance to have the bus services privatised?
This is a real concern, the complaints that the minister's quoting. The minister quoted some 12,000 complaints in the inner west in 12 months as a reasoning for him to privatise the region 6 inner west. What the minister neglected to tell people is that complaints per trips are actually higher in the two other regions, which one of them, which is operated by the private operator, than they are in the inner west. So The minister, when he talks about customer complaints, isn't being honest with the public. He's using that as the reason for privatisation. There is other areas that are run by private operators already which have more complaints. What concerns us is there's 12,000 complaints. He says that's the reason for privatisation. There's more complaints in other areas than there is in the West per trips. The late-running complaints, his own department is responsible for okaying or not okaying extra running times. And I've actually been out in the media for the last couple of years saying that the running times are unrealistic in general. That's why buses are late. And to fix it, you need to put more running times in it. Transport for New South Wales, the Transport Minister, Andrew Constance, they have not allowed state transit to increase the running times. And what's really concerning is now used as an excuse is late running buses for the reason to privatise Region 6.
So if the buses do get sold, what does it mean for residents taking these routes? Would they be paying more than others? And what about, you know, the use of the Opal card?
So the Opal card will still be the same unless the government changed their mind. And you may hear that, you know, the Opal card hasn't worked real well on buses for the last 4 years since it's been implemented, but the government are now talking about using your key card and whatever, all sorts of things. But whatever method there is for paying, at this stage it's Opal, that will still remain in the inner west. Now, the government have come out and said that IPART will be responsible for the fares, increasing the fares or making any alterations to the fares. Now, that is correct, but this government have come out and the minister said recently, on no less than four occasions, he hasn't ruled out further privatisation of the buses. He's even gone a step further and said he wants all public transport to be privatised. If we get to that stage, IPART, if you've got private companies running all these bus companies, and they need to make money, the private companies, they will put pressure on the government to increase fares. Now, if that doesn't happen and the public don't notice, the government will be then subsidising these private operators. Now, if you're going to subsidise a private operator, you might as well keep it in public hands and let us do our job.
What are the demands the union is asking for besides keeping the routes?
So, firstly, we want this Transport Minister, Minister Constance, to sit down and talk to the workers, the union and the community before he makes a decision. This is the second time this minister has gone to the public, made an announcement about the wholesale privatisation, and then dealt with the fallout after that. Now, in Newcastle, he came out and announced the privatisation of Newcastle. That was the first that anybody heard of that. We move forward 18 months. He's now come out and announced on May the 15th to the media that he's privatising Region 6. Now, that's the first we heard of that. So we called on the minister, and I still call on him, to freeze what you're doing, sit down and talk to the workers, talk to the union, and talk to the community about.
And to hear that full interview, please go to 2SER.com, where you can hear the full interview with us and Chris Preston from the RTBU New South Wales. And thank you for that, for speaking to us. I'm Jesse Begley, and a big thanks to our Razor's Edge producers, Ellie Madridge and Monica Samayoa, for getting us these intriguing stories. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Razor's Edge, 2SER's home for New South Wales news. We'll be back next week at 7:30, Thursday evening, with stories big and small. We tweet and podcast all our stories during and after the show, so follow Razor's Edge on Twitter and check out all of our past stories and all of our amazing content made here at 2SER. Don't go anywhere, because Static is up next with 2 hours of awesome new music for you.
First Person is leading literary talent Richard Flanagan's first novel since his 2013 Man Booker Prize-winning The Narrow Road to the Deep North. On October 4, Flanagan sits down with award-winning author Michael Robotham to discuss this much-anticipated new novel. Don't miss Flanagan and Robotham on Wednesday, October 4 at City Recital Hall. Tickets now on sale at swf.org.au. 2SER sponsor.
The City of Sydney is seeking community members to join the Inclusion Advisory Panel. Can you provide expert advice about improving inclusion for people with disability to help with planning, policy development, sustainability and community consultation? Your expertise in the disability field will be highly valued. Applications close 5 p.m. Friday the 29th of September 2017. Visit cityofsydney.newsouthwales.gov.au/inclusion or call 9265 9333. Sponsors of 2SER.
Here's a taste of some of the new music we've got for you on 2SER this week. Globetrotting African fusions from Pierre Quenders. Boomin' and croonin' dream pop with a 50s vintage feel from Madeline Kenny. And the softer side of Sonic Youth's Lee Ronaldo with added electronica. Creep 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, and diverse new music.